Good morning, and welcome to a brand new episode of Riddles in the Dark, brought to you by the Mythgard Institute. We are here to do that sort of the traditional episode that we do every season, the one that I always look forward to. We take things back, all the way back to the beginning. We're going to talk about how will the movie start, which of course is always a fun question to debate, especially with the second two films, where we're interested in looking at where we'll enter into the story after where we left things last time. And it always leaves us ripe for speculation about potential curveball flashbacks, flash forwards. I'm going to personally advocate for flash forwards this time around, or maybe an alternate dimension.
But, or an alternate story like Star Trek or something else.
Yes. Doctor Who. This is always a classic Riddles in the Dark episode. So we're excited to be doing it for you this morning. And let's get started. I am your co-host, Dave Kale, and with me, as always, are the Tolkien professor, Corey Olson, and Trish Lambert.
Okay, good. And before I start, I just wanted to say, stay tuned for at the end of the episode, I have an important announcement about, we have elected and decided the next Mythgard Academy class, so I will talk about that some at
Storm
the end
front
of the episode.
From the Dresden Files.
No, it isn't, Dave. Dave is just sad that his choice didn't in fact quite make the finalist list. Though actually it came pretty close, Dave, I have to say. It was...
Really?
It did.
Too.
Oh, yeah. that means there's hope.
I think it was like maybe number five on the list.
Dave, you and I need to launch a campaign for the next go around.
Because what I've noticed is they tend to have staying power. Like I'm pretty sure Ender's Game has been like almost there every single time.
It's been like it's been the number two slot all the way up until now.
Barely number two.
If we just eliminate everything above, then eventually, yeah, okay.
And then I think
we go on a
super active campaign. You and I need to do a super campaign when voting time comes up.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, so as I said, we will talk about that at the end of our session today. So today, our topic of discussion is the beginning of the film. And, you know, really, when we talk about the beginning and when we talk about the end of the film, the primary thing that I am interested in here is not just kind of, you know, the guesswork about what will the opening scene be exactly. That's, of course, you know, a big part of what we're talking about. But really, the larger implications of that for the story. And the question is really... thinking about the three films, not just as part of the whole epic saga, but as contained story arcs in themselves, where is film three going to start? Because, you know, in many ways, I think that the question that leads into is what is really going to be the focus? What is going to be the central theme of the third film? I'm going to be very interested to see how these things play together. We talked a little bit about sort of the major elements that we think need to happen. Last time, in the context of talking about the elves, we talked about, obviously the resolution of the immediate stuff that was left at the cliffhanger ending, in particular the fight with Smaug at Lake Town, which obviously needs to happen sometime, you know, near the beginning of the film, at least. And then we have the, you know, are we going to get the elves coming to Lake Town to help the refugees of Lake Town? Certainly we're going to need to have some kind of mustering of armies and preparing for the Battle of Five Armies. We're going to have the fortification of the Lonely Mountain, by Thorin and company. I assume we're going to get some kind of relatively extended, political process prior to the outbreak of hostilities at the Lonely Mountain. And that is something which has been made much more complex by the addition of new characters and the complication of relationships, such as the complication of the relationship between Fili and Kili and Thorin, the complication of the relationship between Toriel and Legolas and Thranduil, which we talked about last time, between Bard and the Master. All three of the major... of the major players in the standoff at the Lonely Mountain have sort of more going on internally than they did in the book. So how are we going to see that working out? And of course, we still have Dol Guldur sort of hanging over our heads, and, you know, the possible addition of sequences that we simply just don't see coming. As, for instance, in projecting major plot elements that needed to happen in The Desolation of Smaug, I did not see the golden dwarf statue coming. So, you know, what are we going to see that we didn't expect in this last film? And then, of course, we have the denouement at the end. That we'll save, and we'll talk about how they're going to handle the latter portions, of, you know, the back-again portions of the film towards the ending when we do our traditional ending of the film episode. But where do you guys see them really wanting to start off? I guess sort of the logical place, it seems to me, to start with the question of the beginning of the film is, are we just going to start with Smaug appearing in fire at Lake Town? I mean, is the opening sequence going to be somebody spying the dragon from the distance and you know, somebody yelling to arms and the dragon attacking? Are we going to get an action sequence there at the beginning?
Are we setting aside prologue or frame or
no? It just seems you know, that's certainly a possibility, and we can talk about those too. But it just kind of seemed to me, since we ended the second film with a cliffhanger, the first question in my mind, therefore, is: are we just going to pick up where we left off? Are we going to pick up with Smaug flying in and attacking?
It certainly seems like the most straightforward thing to do, but I don't know. I have this feeling that they won't, given that. So you could argue that the Two Towers ended on a cliffhanger, right? And yet we started with a flashback at the beginning of Return of the King, didn't we?
Well, but there was more closure at the end of the Two Towers. I mean, because we got the whole. I mean, it was a cliffhanger in the sense of the very, in the sense of the fact that the very last shot, you know, the very last little scene in the Two Towers, if I'm remembering correctly, is Frodo and Sam going with Gollum, you know, through Ithilien towards the pass.
And yeah, I guess you're right. It's
the evidence of Gollum, you know, the basically the fact that Gollum was preparing to betray them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like Erica Smith's suggestion. She says she thinks they're going to flash back at the beginning to the destruction of Dale just to confuse everyone. And I would also add, Erica, because we really need to see Geryon shooting off the ballista in all three films. Like, if we don't get that same shot in all three films, you know, then we might feel left hanging there. So yeah.
Also, there hasn't been enough screen time dedicated to the smoldering dolly.
True. Yes. Yes, exactly. Setting up, you know, because we still could get the triumphant return. You know, I was still kind of waiting. You know, and maybe it's in the extended edition. You know, maybe it's going to be in those like 4 extra hours of footage we're going to get in the Desolation of Smaug extended edition. You know, that we're confidently anticipating that one of Bard's daughters was going to like unwrap like the treasured singed dolly recovered from Dale. I think still very likely.
So here's a variation of your question. What would you want them to, so starting where they stopped with Smaug attacking Lake Town seems like the most straightforward and logical thing to do, and I would argue I've been sitting here imagining, like, okay, where else might we go and what impact would they have, and it's hard to imagine them doing anything that wouldn't kind of disrupt the flow. Like, I feel like starting someplace else and then coming right back into the dragon would feel, I don't know, jarring, weird. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Except maybe a flashback. Maybe a flashback I think you could get away with. But I feel like, you know, saying, okay, so last time we left things off, Smaug was about to go kill everyone.
Right.
So we're going to start with the dwarves. Just, you know, sitting around talking about, like, oh, how great is it that, oh, I wonder, what if they... Oh, what if they did that, Corey? What if they did? What if they kind of did parallel storylines, advancing them at different rates? What if they started with the dwarves in the mountain, and and took that all the way up to, you know, like the siege, and then flashbacked to Smaug's attack.
That would be, I can't imagine that. That would be strange. Interesting, but strange, because, you know, it's one thing, I mean, and this is something, and I've mentioned this before, this is something that Tolkien actually, that Tolkien actually sort of flopped around on when he was writing, was what sequence to do that in. You know, because if you have, if you just follow Smaug to Lake Town, do the fight and the destruction, and then go back and talk about the dwarves having just, you know, of course in the book, having just hidden inside the secret door that Smaug shattered, and then them not knowing if he's coming back, and then them sneaking down into the hall and exploring it and thinking that either he's there or he might come back any minute. You know, so basically it's sort of the question of do you go for suspense and not let on that the dragon is dead yet and only tell that after the fact, or do you go ahead and, you know, for the sake of, like, you know, the satisfying story, go right straight from, you know, to Smaug and Smaug's death. And then you have the dramatic irony of Bilbo and the dwarves being there in Lake Town and not, or being there inside the mountain and not knowing that Smaug is dead, but the reader knows that Smaug is dead. So basically, do you want suspense or do you want, you know, dramatic irony? And Tolkien himself debated and, you know, flopped the order of those chapters in the book. So, you know, so you could, but basically he's already, you know, he's already tipped the hand at the end of the film. I mean, we know that Smaug is heading off to Lake Town, so there's no, I don't think there's going to be, we couldn't have the suspense. If we started off with Thorin in those, it's not that we can't start off with them or do some things there, but there's not going to be any suspense. It's just going to be, I think it would just be aggravating to the viewer who knows what Smaug went off to do. And presumably they do too. Bilbo saw him fly off towards Lake Town at the, I mean, that was the last moment of the film. So I think it would just be kind of aggravating.
Yeah, that's true. With Bilbo saying, you know, like, oh, crap. It's hard to imagine him wandering back in the mountain saying, like, well, guys, and sort of the dwarves and Bilbo in particular kind of obliviously wandering around the mountain saying, well, it's our mountain now. I have a feeling Bilbo will spend the whole time going, we should go find out what happened to Lake Town, guys. Guys.
Right. Right.
That's true. It seemed like a kind of a neat idea of trying to build the suspense and sort of throwing the reader a curveball where, like, the next thing we hear about the next thing we hear about the dragon is, you know, oh, he's wait, what? Where did he go? Is he dead? But I think you're right. I think that for the movie-going audience, that would just be frustrating, aggravating. Like, they're just going to be sitting there saying, like, I want, where's my dragon action scene?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you have just deprived me of ample screen time dedicated to the awesome special effects dragon and vocal stylings of Benedict Cumberbatch, and now he's dead. Thanks a lot, guys.
Right. You're not fooling anyone, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the only thing they could get away with would be a short flashback or prologue or something. I think any amount of, you know, significant amount of screen time dedicated to not dragon right at the start is going to make people mad.
Right. You know, unless, you know, there is the real possibility. I mean, thinking about Dol Guldur, because, of course, that seems to me a pretty good candidate, too. Because that was left hanging, also literally hanging, but earlier in the film, right? So we do get the Smaug cliffhanger, but don't forget, we've had a kind of a double cliffhanger in the film. Both of those plot threads are in suspense. The only plot stream in The Desolation of Smaug that ends on a sort of satisfying resolved note is in a sense, the Lake Town one. That is the Torrio and Kiwi thing. But of course, there's still some suspense involved with the Lake Town plot, in that, you know, we've got Bard in prison, and like, how's he going to get out to shoot the dragon? But it's not a cliffhanger in the sense of, you know, Gandalf is captured and pinned to the wall, and they're watching the dragon fly off to Lake Town. It's not that same sort of caliber of cliffhanger. But again, Dol Guldur is a cliffhanger, so
literally.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe we return
there
at the beginning. Exactly. What do you think about the overall placement of, because this to me is sort of part of the big question of this. How long do you think the Dol Guldur stuff is going to drag out in the film? Would we expect that to be resolved earlier, like in the first half of the film, so that we can bring, you know, concentrate all of the focus? Because, you know, this is one thing that happens a little bit in the Lord of the Rings, both book and film. I mean, you think about the way that the plot threads spread out in the Two Towers, right? You know, you've got the one unified plot thread of the journey of the Fellowship particularly in what is book two of the Lord of the Rings. Then, you know, at Parth Gawain, we splinter, right? And we've got now the Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli plot. We've got the Merry and Pippin plot. We've got the Frodo and Sam plot. And then, you know, then you've got the separate Merry plot and the Pippin and Gandalf plot and the Aragorn plot, and still the Frodo and Sam plot. So it starts to come together, so that at the very end we only have two. But it never really unifies again until the very end of the, you know, until after the climax of the story. The one way in which it seems that the overall plot shape of the third Hobbit film could be quite different is that the Battle of Five Armies seems to me the logical crossroads of all plot threads in this story. And that's kind of what I would expect, actually, that's the moment that all of these separate plot threads that we've been, you know, we've kind of diversified, not quite as much as we did in the Lord of the Rings story. But now we have at least three major plot threads, right? You know, the people who are currently in Lake Town, the people who are, you know, and by the way, I am including under the category of people who are in Lake Town, people who are on horseback chasing down orcs.
Out of Lake Town?
Out of Lake Town, yes. I'm still counting him as part of the Lake Town plot.
They're within the extended radius of the yes, plot point
the greater plot point plot thread jurisdiction of Lake Town still. So then you've got obviously the Erebor people, and you've got the Dol Guldur people. But I assume these are all coming together at the Battle of Five Armies. And I mean, if you think about it, that's how the Battle of Five Armies works in the Hobbit book. I mean, basically the Battle of Five Armies is where almost every character, like almost everyone that we've met and, you know, through the entire Hobbit shows up again. I mean, it's like, you know, it's the Battle of Five Armies is like the high school reunion, you know, at the end of the story. It's everybody shows up at the Battle of Five Armies with the exception of Elrond, basically. Everybody else in the whole story. Okay. Oh, the trolls don't show up, but of course they can't. But they would, if they were mobile, they would.
He is the great goblin.
No, but his people do, so, you know.
Well, that's true.
His people do, that's true.
my sense is, in the Hobbit film, we're going to get that, you know, everybody's going to come together and all of the things are going to reconverge, so that in the Battle of Five Armies, we're not going to be getting flashbacks. You know, in the Battle of Pelennor Field, even, we were still getting flashbacks to other things. That is, not flashbacks, but cuts to the other plot threads that were going on at the same time. And, you know, with the conflict before the Black Gate, you know, we have Frodo and Sam climbing Mount Doom while the Black Gates are opening. You know, so we're still bouncing, you know, even at that climactic moment, still bouncing back and forth between the two plots, which, well, of course, is perfectly appropriate in The Lord of the Rings. But that's
that
not the way
happen.
Here.
Well, it could happen if Jackson sets up Sauron to be some kind of mover, you know, in the background of the Battle of Five Armies. In other words, if his orc armies are being sort of managed by him, so to speak, similar to, you know, the battle in front of the Black Gates, we could get a similar thing.
So we could get essentially like the Battle of Dol Guldur being the Mount Doom equivalent,
yeah.
Essentially. I mean, not equivalent, obviously, but yeah.
Right. I mean, I hadn't thought of that until you mentioned that, but, you know, wouldn't it be like Jackson to have sort of an echo so that when in future generations people watch these in order, they'll be going, oh, the Battle at the Black Gates, just like that one, you know, in the Hobbit.
Right, right. I don't know.
But that can't over... So we're...
I'm not
so
a big fan
imagine...
of that, but...
Would you imagine, Trish, that would be happening at the beginning during the dragon's attack?
No, well, originally that's what I was thinking until Corey just said what he said. You know, I mean, I was thinking they were going to get, you know, have the Battle of Dol Guldur, you know, wham, bam, you know, okay, it's done, now let's move on to the Battle of Five Armies and get Gandalf to Erebor. And that's kind of what I'm thinking. And I also think he's not going to, Pete said it earlier, you know, that, and I agree with him, I don't think he's going to give us the payoff of the dragon getting killed the very first thing. There's either going to be a flashback or something else. It could be we start off with Gandalf of Dol Guldur telling the moth to go get Galadriel, or we have even Legolas in his pursuit of Bolg, and I still am holding out for that Aragorn moment where he sees the, you know, the armies and turns around to warn everybody. Something like that instead of, and then we cut to the dragon. You know, that's kind of what I'm expecting. I don't think he's going to kick off. And of course, he's been famous. He's done two flashbacks already. We may get another. So my idea for a flashback, if he does a flashback, is he might do a flashback of the dragon attacking Dale again, but this time
yes.
Maybe interspersing it with him attacking Lake Town in real time.
Okay, so just be completely disoriented.
So we have Durian shooting the ballista, and then we have Bard shooting the ballista.
can we also splice into there some flashbacks of like Glaurung destroying Nargothrond and just like a,
well,
you know, the dragon
thing.
Destruction
they spent
montage.
So much
you know,
money on that Dale. They spent so much money on that Dale set. He wants to use it as much as possible.
I like that idea, Corey. Let's just have scenes from throughout history of famous
dragons.
Dragon attacks.
Hey, that would be awesome.
There you go.
That would be fantastic.
And Chrysophylax.
Exactly. As I say, yeah. Let's you know, while we're at it, you know, yeah. Let's throw in some Farmer Giles of Ham. You know, let's have a reference to the unpublished Dragon's Visit. You know, as why not?
Hey, if there's any one thing someone needs to depict visually, it's the aerial combat between Encalagon the Black and Eärendil.
And absolutely, yep.
I like Daniel's idea is the movie should open with Smaug's dream to confuse the audience.
That is fantastic. I mean, I don't see how it could be done because they'd have to screw with the chronology. I mean, we can't have. I mean, unless like Smaug is nodding off on the wing, you know, which is a little anticlimactic. But anyway, that would be hilarious. I mean, that would be absolutely hysterical to have started the film with like this climactic fight between a solo warrior and Smaug, ending with the climactic destruction of the dragon, and then have Smaug like, you know, jar up out of sleep. That would be hysterical.
Finding he's careening toward the ground. He's like, oh, crap.
Yes, exactly. That would just make it weird. But I love the Smaug's dream idea. I think
especially if they gave the nondescript tall warrior a all black blade.
Yes, you know, hey.
And then those of us talk about that would be a massive Easter egg for those of us. Yeah. Who know.
I'm sure that would be walking a very fine line.
Yeah.
On a slightly more
realistic
note, on the Battle of Dol Guldur stuff, you know, we've been operating under an assumption that I just, for whatever reason, just as thinking things through today, it's one of those they'll stay true to the book assumptions that we occasionally make that I think has come back to bite us in the past. We've been assuming Gandalf has to get to the mountain for the siege.
Yes, that's true. And
I'm kind of wondering, now I'm starting to think it through, I'm like, well, maybe he doesn't need to be there. So, because all along...
He doesn't really play a part in the battle.
Yeah, all along I've been asserting that they've made a huge mistake with the way they're packing things into this last movie, and there's no time for people to get one place to another, and there's too much. And that, in particular, the Battle of Dol Guldur could not overlap the Battle of Five Armies. So they can't move on to the siege and the Battle of Five Armies until they wrap up Battle of Dol Guldur and Gandalf gets out of there. But, the Legolas possibility... Legolas opens up a new possibility. We don't need Gandalf. Gandalf's main, really his main role in the siege, I know he plays various narrative roles, but his main role is to point out the obvious, guys, we have bigger problems, the goblins are coming. Legolas could do that now.
Right.
We could have Legolas come riding up just as they're about to come to fisticuffs and say, hey guys.
The goblins are coming.
Yeah. So maybe Battle of Dol Guldur could be ongoing and overlap Battle of Five Armies.
Okay, well, that basically seems to go back to the whole Mount Doom Black Gate parallel thing.
Right. Yeah, that's what got me thinking it.
Yeah, well, but see, the thing is, I have a heart. Difficult to come to decisions about this without thinking more thoroughly through the Dol Guldur story, which I think we have an episode on later. So I don't want to go. I want to stay a little bit focused here, because to me I will at least ask the question, even if we don't try to answer it today, and that is, what is going to be the end point of the Dol Guldur plot? And we've talked about this a little bit before, I'm thinking here in particular with this possibility of the overlapping with the Battle of Five Armies. I don't think so. I think the Battle of Five Armies is going to be much more... I my prediction would be that collapsing of the thing to one plot thread, that things would converge there. I think Gandalf is going to show up. My only question is Galadriel coming too?
I had that thought too. If Gandalf shows up, I mean, is Galadriel going to be there? Is Elrond going to be there? I thought about that when you said high school reunion. I thought, oh my God, watch, Elrond and Galadriel are going to be at the Battle of Five Armies.
Galadriel, Saruman, Why not? We could bring Haldir back. He's not dead yet. So there you go.
And pointing elf.
This would be fantastic.
What about Barlaam and Butterbur?
Barlaam and Butterbur, yeah. Yeah, let's bring in the young Butterbur.
That's an interesting possibility. I kind of hope not, but...
That Elrond doesn't show up?
Yeah. Well, just for one thing, I don't know, because it distracts from the new characters, and then... Because that would increase the probability that Sauron is going to show up, which I think would ruin everything.
Yeah. I'm tending to think more and more that the Dol Guldur thing may stay separate and Gandalf may not end up at the Battle of Five Armies. Like Dave said, Legolas is the Paul Revere guy. And Faye pointed out that we have a new video meme. They're taking the orcs to Erebor. They're taking the orcs to Erebor.
They're taking the goblins to Erebor. Yeah, exactly.
The goblins to Erebor. why would Gandalf show up and not the others? It just seems like to me.
Well, I have a suggestion for why Radagast wouldn't show up, but.
Yes, true. That's true. Actually, Gandalf could end up commandeering his sled, in Radagast's absence. Yeah. Grab the sled, take off for Erebor.
That's the converse assumption that I'm making that also might not be true. On the one hand, I'm assuming that Gandalf has to be there, but maybe he doesn't. On the other hand, I'm assuming that he can't get there if the Battle of Dol Guldur lasts longer than 5 minutes in the movie, which is also not true. Gandalf could teleport from one place to the other instantaneously.
My goodness. I mean, so, for the length of the time it would take to do a scene where we have, like, one acrimonious exchange at the gates of the Lonely Mountain, Gandalf could make it from Dol Guldur to Erebor. I mean,
Gandalf could have... Yeah, he could have traversed the circles of Arda like four or five times.
Exactly. I mean, there's really no point in. I mean, when Bolg can get from Beorn's house to Dol Guldur in apparently 15 minutes. I mean, and it's not just what the, you know, the amount of you know, secondary world time that seems to have passed. It does seem to be like that same day that he's showing up at Dol Guldur. But even just like in the audience's experience, I mean, we have one, as I recall, one scene intervenes between them leaving, you know, them seeing Bjorn in the distance and saying, let's get out of here, we gotta go back, the master calls, and when they show up at Dol Guldur. I think it's just the one scene in Bjorn's house. So again, yeah, one intervening scene, and you go from Dol Guldur to the Lonely Mountain. Why not?
You know, the one that still gets me is, and they actually specifically say a time, I think, is going from Lake Town in the morning to making it on the overlooked dale by noon. Yes, the same day.
Yeah.
And they actually say it's noon, right? Because that's when Gandalf was supposed to be there.
And they explicitly say, as they're entering Mirkwood, I forget exactly, but don't they say they've, like, Durin's days in, like, a week?
Right.
Yeah, they're
right.
Like,
when they're on the western fringes of Mirkwood, they're about to enter Mirkwood. So, yeah, we're going to cross Mirkwood on foot. I mean, that's, crossing Mirkwood on foot in, like, 5 days is much more impressive than taking a boat up the river in a few hours, you know.
That's true.
but anyway, yeah. So I think it's pretty.
We certainly
temporal spatial relations.
Yeah, shouldn't found any conclusions about where characters will be when based on geography.
No.
Right. No. Or the amount of time it's going to take.
Haven't we learned this lesson by now?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So here's a. I've steered us away from what the episode's supposed to be.
Well, sort of.
Not really.
Sort of. I mean, so, again, you know, right, thinking of overall plot trajectories is an important thing,
right,
here.
Yeah.
In trying to, because it's because we need to have some sense of where we're going in order to figure out how we're going to get there, and that's ultimately, I think, anyway, what this episode's about. So. So yeah, I'm still thinking of the Battle of Five Armies as the fundamental destination of the, you know, of the front half of this film. I would expect the Battle of Five Armies as a sequence to take quite some time.
I hope so.
Yeah.
There's just too much awesome stuff that happens during it that I hope that they don't give us like 15 minutes. I hope it's like a good hour.
Yeah, yeah. Philip, Philip Lord makes a really good point, which is that he says Gandalf could. He thinks that Gandalf will show up, but Toriel could fill the role as someone both the dwarves and elves could trust.
Right.
It is true that's you know the role that Gandalf plays in the book. It's not that he does not. I mean, you're right that you know he doesn't seem to make a very concrete contribution, but the role that he does play is somebody that can speak to all of them. You know, of course, Thorin has a pretty negative response when Gandalf shows up. You know, you seem all in league. You know, and he says he's never going to have anything to do with wizards again. But anyway, he's somebody
how
who
true he was.
Right.
Little did he know.
But he is in that role. I agree with the addition of Toriel and the sort of the complication of the cast there. There are certainly other people who could do what Gandalf does at the beginning, I think. At the beginning of the battle, that is. Yeah. Yeah. You know, David Mosley is asking, you know, can Toriel play Gandalf's role with Bilbo in the Arkenstone debacle? But all he does is commend him. You know, he says, well done, you know, tutorial could do that. But I mean, I obviously it's not going to have the same sort of
effect.
It
won't have the same gravitas. Yeah, it won't have the same gravitas.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask... sorry, I'm kind of changing topics a little bit, but I wanted to see... let's suppose for now that they don't start they don't go immediately into the Smaug's attack, and they don't start with a flashback, which I personally think what I expect is they'll have a flashback and then they'll go into the dragon's attack. I'm almost convinced.
So he'll be 3 for 3 then.
Yes. Yeah. He's done a flashback in almost every movie. But I think you know, basically doing just about anything else other than a flashback and going right into the dragon's attack will drag things out too much. But for sake of argument, what do each of you guys think is the sort of if we rule that possibly out, where else might we start that would work well, that wouldn't seem weird?
I think starting in Erebor would seem weird. So I'm like I'm inversely answering your question. Because that to me seems kind of weirdest. Because he just left Erebor.
Right.
So I mean,
final thing of what have we done kind of is a segue almost. You know what I mean? It's like it just take us away from Erebor.
Exactly. I mean, so what are we going to get? We're going to start the film with them like milling around in Erebor and being like. Oh shoot!
we lost our gold statue.
Just like the dwarves standing there, with their hands shielding their eyes, looking down towards Erebor. Like, do you see? Can you see what's going on? No, I can't either. I mean, it's just that. What do you do at the beginning in Erebor unless you jump forward? You know, Dave, like you were suggesting, to past the death of the dragon, in which case everyone's going to be deeply confused. I think. My actual answer to the question is Dol Guldur. I think that Dol Guldur serves as an excellent option.
I agree.
It is neither flashback nor is it just jumping straight into the action, but it's an overdue return. I mean, we got Gandalf's been hanging for a long time, even within film time. You know, even if you're watching Desolation of Smaug and there and back again, back to back, it's been a long time that Gandalf has been hanging. So
it's something that needs resolution, which they could. I agree. I think that's what they start with, is somehow Gandalf being saved or something going on at Dol Guldur,
or Radagast showing up to Galadriel, or something Dol Guldur related. That would be a way, Dave, that you could do something else that's contemporaneous with the downfall of Lake, you know, with the destruction of Smaug, which is not simply a distraction. You know, which is not simply like, meanwhile, we all know you want to know what's happening with the dragon attacking Lake Town, but we are going to pointlessly take you to somewhere else that, you know, you don't care about because we're you know, transparently trying to draw out the suspense.
That's right. We're going to, meanwhile, in the Shire...
right, exactly.
Bilbo has been declared dead, and they're going to put his stuff up for auction.
That would be fantastic.
That's terrible.
Oh, that would be an awesome beginning. The film opens with people, like, peering in through the windows of Bag End.
Or Cordelia has a policeman, you know, like,
exactly.
Breaking down the door of Bag End.
I kind of like this idea now.
And they decide to, and like, you know, somebody makes the decision to go hire the firm of Grubbs, and Burrows to run the auction at Bilbo's estate. You know, where is that Mr. Baggins? And then we segue back to the Lonely Mountain, and we're back in it now. That would be hysterical.
I love that. And to your point, Corey, about, you know, like the beginning, tied up in the question of the start of the movie, it kind of points us toward where we're going and sets the tone for what is this film really about.
That's right.
That would actually, from that standpoint, that is the perfect beginning. That's how it should begin.
That's right.
That's really what it's about.
That's really what it's about. So we get, yes.
Yeah, because the flashback or that piece of the story could end with somebody going, I wonder where Mr. Bilbo got to. And then we go into the story.
Oh, yeah. And see...
Also, that, presumably, that's where we're going to end. Well, of course, that's where we're going to end.
That's right.
Back again.
Absolutely.
And coming back.
And remember those poignant lines in film one where Bilbo is like, you know, I miss my home, but like your home has been taken away from you. And then it's like, oh, the cruel irony. Bilbo's home is being taken away from him while he's gone. Yes. As he's going and restoring the homeland of the dwarves, his own home is getting put up for auction. Oh, dear. Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Kate has a Bilbo dream. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's even cooler. You remember in the book, Bilbo has that really random dream when he's sleeping in the Eagle's Eyrie. He dreams that he's back at Bag End, and he's looking around for something, and he can't remember what it is or where he left it. That's totally what it should be. It should be Bilbo's random dream of wandering around Bag End looking for something. That would be a great beginning. That would be fantastic. Yeah.
I like her follow-up. They can add that he's actually looking for his spoons.
His spoons, his silver spoons, right. Yeah, yeah. He's having a nightmare
Another
about Lobelius stealing his silver spoons. Yes, exactly.
When I last counted them, I had 5. Now there's only 4.
Right, because some of them are made of tin. Oh, wait, they can't mention that, or there would be a lawsuit, because that's in Unfinished Tales. but anyway...
Now, actually, that brings up another subject, which I think unlikely, but I wanted to get you guys' take on it. What do you think of the possibility of them beginning the film with the frame narrative?
Going back to Frodo, you mean?
Yeah, Frodo and Old.
I don't know whatever happened to the frame narrative.
Well, they, you know, Elijah Wood did say in an interview way back when that it's going to be bookends, and I didn't take that to mean literally, but I guess maybe it will be, you know, that we'll see him at the very, very, very end of the movie.
I think
so. But I was
so.
Wondering if, you know, I personally don't think we'll have the frame narrative at the beginning of the movie.
No.
They've obliterated it with the, I think in particular the flashback to Bree at the beginning of Desolation of Smaug. Like that just, I was thinking about that while I was on a run.
Well, I guess that would be
like,
one reason to have it would be to remind us.
Yeah. Yeah, I
you
was
know,
like,
I mean, that would be one reason to have the frame there.
Yeah, how do flashbacks fit in with the, is Bilbo sitting there writing the story, or telling the story to Frodo and saying, like, all right, now we're going to do, now let me interrupt the story to tell you about something that happened even before that.
Yeah, because, you know.
That I wasn't there for, but I heard about it.
Yeah.
It's actually, you know, I've never really thought about this before, but it's absolutely true that flashbacks are something which seem actually kind of mysteriously to work in films. But in books, they're awful. That is, like, imagine if you're writing a story and you just all of a sudden break and in the next paragraph, you start telling something without introduction or voiceover or anything, you know, without context, you know, without narrative context in the story. You just start telling a story of something that happened a long time ago, you know, so because it's not even like a meanwhile over in kind of transition. You know, you're just going along with the story and then, you know, you skip a line and say, Thorin walked into the bar at the Prancing Pony, and it's like, wait, what the heck is going on?
Or that now, would, even in a series of books, you know, where maybe
yes.
like a trilogy to open up the second book with something like that also would be jarring. You'd be like, what?
The only way that tends to happen in books, as you say, sometimes you can do that kind of thing, but you have to set it as like a prologue. I mean, it has to be to be actually like physically separated from the rest of the book in order for it not to be really weird. So yeah, it is a strange kind of thing. And, you know, Noam says you can do it in another chapter. Yes, but you still need a mechanism. I mean, if you just it can happen, but it's very strange if you don't give any kind of transition. If you just chapter two, I'm now telling you things, you know, like which happened.
Yeah, you'd have at least a sentence or two to sort of introduce the flashback. Yeah.
Or give some kind of excuse for going back and saying it. Which again doesn't happen in films.
You kind of just have to set it up as like a weird in the book. You have to set up as like a weird sort of separate device, like the start of each of George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire books. Like those are it works, but it works only because he keeps doing it, so we just accept that that's the way, you know, that we're always going to start off with some weird point of view chapter from a character that's not one of the main, you know.
That's about to die. Oh, wait, that's all of them. But yes.
Noam has taken the challenge. He's going to go find some examples.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, so no, I do think that that's, sorry, just sort of a reflection on the difference, you know, a difference I had not considered between storytelling in film form and storytelling in book form. But of course, what you were saying about Bilbo writing the book, which is what we were getting in the frame narrative, made me think of it. Because, you know, how do you go back to the frame and include that kind of thing? Especially since, you know, basically my main reason for why I don't expect to return to the frame at the beginning of the film is there was too much closure at the end of the frame sequence at the beginning. I mean, when, you know, the way that we had Frodo setting off to meet Gandalf in the beginning of the Fellowship of the Ring, that was too neatly tied up, you know? There was nothing sort of left. Because to return to that frame, it seems to me that the only two ways we could return to that frame are either just to return to Bilbo sitting there writing, and I don't see much excuse for that, or what would be accomplished by that. Or, if we return to some kind of action or conversation with Bilbo, it would have to be Frodo and Gandalf coming in. You know, like, the two of them ride back in the wagon and then enter into Bilbo's house and meet Bilbo, like we saw in the Fellowship of the Ring or something. But it's just, I can't see that happening. That's too much, you know, maybe at the end, but I can't see that happening at the beginning of the film at all.
I agree.
But again, I was saying,
this is not so much in the beginning of the movie question, but I noticed we don't really have a spot for this elsewhere in our editorial calendar. How is Dian going to be introduced? I mean, is he just going to come riding up on his pig? I mean, isn't there going to be need to be something? I mean, the reason I thought about that is that somebody, and I'm sorry I just missed it somewhere, but somebody mentioned, you know, maybe a dwarf council with Dian at the beginning of the movie. I wouldn't expect that, but then it brings up the question. It's like, how are we going to know who this guy is when he comes riding in on his boar?
Okay, wait, I've got it. Opening scene.
Oh, I'm worried.
We're in the Iron Hills, okay? And there's Dian and a bunch of other dwarves, and we're like, wait, who are these dwarves? Where are we? And then Roach the Raven flies in and tells him about the doings that, you know, Thorin has returned. The dragon has been routed out of the Lonely Mountain. Come back! And he's like, saddle up the pigs! We're on the way out! You know, like, that's...
Saddle up the pigs!
That is my prediction. There we go. It's perfect. What do you think, Dave? You're speechless. I can tell you are overwhelmed by this idea.
Yeah, that's almost certainly how it's going. Seems self-evident, really.
It's going to be interesting to see how Dian gets introduced, because, I mean, he's completely a non-entity. We don't know who he is.
I mean, none.
I think they mentioned him slightly when he was reporting on the result of his meeting at the Blue Mountains when he gets to the Bag End. That's it.
I think this is another thing where it's sort of my foreboding is that they've mismanaged his introduction, that one, they have not introduced him yet. And so he's just going to be showing up, and we're going to be like, who's this? And two, because of how packed the film's going to be, we're not going to have... I have a feeling they're going to race through the siege and the parlay.
I think the other thing is Billy Connolly has alienated Tolkien fans so much that Jackson may have just dropped him from the movie.
Maybe he's minimized. Yeah, he's like, oh, dang it. I can't give this guy any screen time.
Anyway, yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how Dian shows up. Anyway, there wasn't any place else to say that, and I know, I mean, it could be the start of the movie, not likely, but anyway.
Oh, come on, I love my Roach idea.
I think it's a great idea.
Because we start with, I mean, how many other films have started from exposition by a talking raven? Seriously, I mean, that's...
But we haven't even met Roach, isn't that sad?
Well, you know, I'm still... I haven't 100% given up hope on Roach the Raven yet.
Me neither.
There's still time. There's still plenty of time. We could still have him. You know, I'm totally there.
I haven't given up either.
Yeah. Maybe Roach will end up becoming the arbiter in the siege. You know, take Gandalf's role as peacemaker. There you go.
I like Gerald's suggestion. Roach will break Bard out of jail
and get the ballista arrow in his teeth, in his beak, and deliver it to him.
Yeah. Well, see, if the thrush isn't going to tell him about the weak spot, you know, we still have to have some bird intervention here, so.
That's right.
Yes. Yep, yep. Okay. You know, actually, Philip had another good suggestion, which is a slightly more serious suggestion, which is that instead of just cutting across to the Iron Hills, we could have a flashback to the Dwarf Council that Thorin attended prior to the unexpected party. That would introduce Dan.
That's right. That was the intro. I couldn't remember who had done it, but that was the intro that made me think of it. Yeah. That's a possibility.
The one that was referenced at the beginning of an unexpected journey. Where they're like, oh, so they're coming?
Exactly. They won't come.
The one thing about that for me is, again, with time and stuff, is so what that would set up is this dynamic where the other dwarves seem like kind of the betrayers who wouldn't fight for their king and wouldn't, you know, come and help him and stuff. And I feel like there's just not enough time to dig into the nuance of that and also have them come rushing up to save him when called for from the elves. You know what I mean? Like, how many people can he be at odds with? He's at odds with his own dwarf backers as well as the elves and the men and pretty much everyone. I don't know. It's something that I feel like if they really wanted to explore that, the maybe his simmering resentment that they wouldn't come help him, I feel like it should have been done by now, because there's just not going to be enough time in this film. You know, otherwise it's going to seem really weird that he's going to be like, you know, oh, those other dwarves wouldn't come help me. And then, oh, we're under siege. Call for the other dwarves who wouldn't come help us. Oh, here they are. Thank God. Hey, guys, I love you. You know, it's going to seem resolved too quickly.
But don't forget, you know, into all of these policies comes the Arkenstone. That's the keystone, right? I mean, that's how you get. If you have the Arkenstone, then he can command the appearance of the dwarves. Is there some mechanism for this? I have a sort of a sinking feeling that. There's going to be some kind of magical connection, you know. I mean, like, he's still got to actually communicate with Dan. How could Thorin send a "I've got the Arkenstone" message, even though he doesn't have the Arkenstone? But leaving that aside for a second, I don't know. So the Arkenstone has clearly been made the turning point. Dave, so we do have an excuse for why they wouldn't help before, but why they would expect the help later. But it's still...
If he gets the news that the dwarves have entered Erebor, the dragon's dead, Dian could just assume that Thorin has the Arkenstone. I mean, that would be a safe assumption.
That's true.
Possibly.
Maybe he's already set out for... Maybe we'll get a scene that shows him deciding to set out without even having heard from Thorin.
Roach takes Thorin's message. I have the Arkenstone here somewhere.
Right, exactly, right. Trust me, I totally have the Arkenstone. Like, absolutely. You can count on me for having the Arkenstone, because I'm here in the mountain, so obviously I have the Arkenstone.
This has to be a very carefully crafted message.
Exactly.
I've recaptured the Lonely Mountain, but the dragon's still alive and flying around. Probably going to kill us.
And I have no idea where the Arkenstone is. But, yeah, wait, okay.
I'm currently in possession of the Arkenstone, if you define possession as it's in the same mountain as I am.
Right.
Somewhere.
I have reclaimed the mountain and everything that belongs to it.
Yes.
There you go.
Oh, Jonathan brings up a good point. Could the film open with Thrian? Either in real time or in a flashback, I suppose. But he's talking about real time, actually.
This was a suggestion. Oh, yeah, to where Thrain is living, not in captivity, off as a wild man in the woods, like I predicted so long ago, which I still think is the likeliest solution here. I mean, but
and
anyway.
He's the agent that brings the dwarves from the Iron Hills.
Whoa. Okay, I didn't anticipate that. Maybe. But I was wanting to go back, and I totally lost it. It was like pages ago on our comments thread here. Somebody suggested that the film could start with a flashback to Thran giving Gandalf the key and map.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's a really neat idea. We've been kind of hoping for that flashback at some point, or at least some explanation at some point. That was on our to-do list for the extended edition. But that would be kind of interesting. My biggest concern about it is that the flashback at the beginning of a film, I mean, again, thinking back even to Peter Jackson Precedence, the flashback at the beginning of the film is important because it sets a thematic tone for the movie as a whole. The Two Towers starts with the flashback of Gandalf plummeting down with the Balrog. And that is important because, of course, it's not only a reminder of that visual image to anticipate the return of Gandalf, but even that image of, like, you know, the fact that as he's falling, he's fighting the Balrog and the sort of apparent destruction as they fall in this blazing comet towards the water, which is a striking visual image at the end of that flashback sequence. The way that that gets, sort of connected with the parallel there and with Gandalf returning in the flash of white light to the battle at the end, and the theme throughout the Two Towers film of, like, the stubborn resistance against apparently overwhelming forces. I mean, again, those things are all established in that flashback at the beginning. In The Return of the King, we start with the flashback to Sméagol and Diagol in the ring, which of course establishes the parallel to Frodo and what's going on with him and the ring, and, you know, the lure of the ring and the way that the ring is eroding his will. Seeing Gollum's life being essentially destroyed, you know, Diggle's life being immediately destroyed, and Smeagol's life being long-term destroyed by the discovery of the ring, you know, we have the parallel between, you know, notice we have a reversal in both of those flashbacks, you know, that is, we have Gandalf falling to his apparent death, which is then reversed by Gandalf's resurrection during the Two mm-hmm. Towers. The finding of the ring, to bookend the destruction of the ring. So we can see how these flashbacks have a function. They're not just random flashbacks. Or they're not just, like, let's fill a hole in the plot kind of flashbacks. Mm-hmm. Even in The Desolation of Smaug, the flashback to the Inn at Bree is very relevant and again corresponds to the climactic scene with Thorin in Erebor and the Golden Dwarf King statue, because it's all about Thorin's leadership and and Thorin's role as king and leader and what's he doing and
Well, you know, don't forget the Lego set at Dol Guldur had that ring under the statue, and the ring under the statue trick, which kind of connects Thrian to Dol Guldur, so that kind of a flashback with the ring, the key, the map flashback is definitely a candidate, I think, for film three in the context of what you just described in terms of the thematic setup and whatnot. And then we would go straight to Dol Guldur after that flashback.
Maybe, though that's a lot of weight. I mean, if we do a flashback, then Dol Guldur, we're going to, like...
Then the dragon.
Right. I mean, we're going to, like, seriously, we're going to wait, like, 20 minutes, 30 minutes before we finally... Like, Smaug's going to take he's going to take that long to fly from the Lonely Mountain to Lake Town.
There will be riots.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
Radagast could have gotten there and back 50 times by then. It's hard for me to see two scenes. I can see one scene prior to the attack on Lake Town. But two, I mean, maybe, but...
Yeah. So either a flashback or the beginning in real time, and then it's somewhere else, and then the dragon hitting Lake Town.
Yeah.
That's what you're thinking. Yeah.
I, You know, it's funny, Corey. I really, my mind has latched on to this, starting with Bilbo's house being up for auction. I doubt it's likely, but I've decided that that is the only flashback that makes any sense, because that's ultimately where this film is going. Anything else is you know, like a anything else is basically just introducing plot elements or plot points. But if we want to talk theme of the film, there and back again.
That's right.
What is it really about? It's about at the end of Bilbo's journey and him going home and being changed. Like, oh man, that, I'm like, God, they got to do this. They got to do this auction flashback flash across.
I just love that statement. Like, anything besides the legal preparations for the auction of Bilbo's house is simply a digression. I mean, it's just beside the point.
Right. Yeah. We need to get on to the real business.
We need to stay focused on what really matters and what the audience has come here to see. Have they come to see a dragon die? Have they come to see a wizard rescued? No. They have come to see like action
right,
filed
the
for
movie
the
is
start.
Called The Hobbit, so that's let's get right. back to
Absolutely. Here. Let's get back to Bilbo's Silver Spoons, for crying out loud. Yeah. I love it. I just love this idea.
The only other thing I will accept is a flash forward to the distant future of Legolas and Gimli boarding a white ship.
Legolas and Gimli boarding a flash forward to Legolas and Gimli boarding a white ship?
Yes, that's the only other thing I would accept.
Okay.
That's way forward.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Hey, let's just flash forward to, like, Turin Turambar killing Melkor. You know, like, how about that?
Well, that's good.
As long as we're flashing forward.
I was just going to go as far
Faye,
as Arwen
how on earth would I pull that off? Faye's asking how on earth would I pull that off. I just put in a flashback with John Rhys Davies and
He'd
Orlando
do it.
Bloom.
He'd totally do it. He's begging to do it again. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that guy was, yeah, he yeah. He would probably do it for free.
And, and Legolas's line as they got on the ship would be something like, "Who would have ever thought, back when I was chasing Bolg out of Lake, that it would have come to this?"
I really hope
that's. I would love it if that was like some extra material at the on the extended edition.
Right. Brianna's point is, as long as we're flashing back, let's just flash back all the way to Durin looking in the mirror.
Yeah. Well, or I was thinking, what about, we'll go back to Sauron's apprenticeship with Morgoth.
Or Luthien singing his tower down.
Yeah.
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 And flying away.
These things are all very likely.
I think so.
Yeah. Aule creating the dwarves, Yana suggests.
There we go. Now, I do just want to put in a sour note here, which is that we're pretty much actually a little bit past our allotted time for discussing this, although I've let it go because the riddle's pretty simple, so...
Okay, well, let's... Yeah, and we've been talking about the riddle the whole time.
Debating the...
So the let's do this. Let us make a summary of what we believe to be plausible flashback scenarios. At the beginning.
By whose definition?
We also include hilarious.
a hilarious flashback openings is a different category entirely. though I would, in deference to you, Dave, include the auction preparation as fitting in both categories. But if we accept, you know, meanwhile, you know, back in the offices of Chubbs and Burrows.
I gotta be honest, if this is how the movie starts, security is going to be pulling me from the theater because I will be either laughing or screaming so loudly.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be,
Well,
that's
so
be awesome.
In the plausible things, first of all, we do have a 2 for 3 so far flashback thing. So some kind of flashback is certainly plausible.
Certainly plausible, right. So among the things we could flashback to that would be plausible include Thrain giving the map and key to Gandalf. That seems to me very much in the plausible category.
Thorin meeting with the council.
Thorin meeting with the dwarf council. Yes, I agree. That sounds to me like a plausible flashback. Somebody lost track of it. Flashback to Thranduil getting his face messed up. That's an interesting suggestion, and I can't remember who made it.
The attack on Dale.
Oh yeah, Philip. It was Philip again.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Thranduil's earlier encounter. Right. Oh yeah. Okay. Right. Flashback to Dale again. Let's by all means see Smaug blowing up Dale buildings again. Anything else? Anything we haven't thought of yet for flashback scenes?
The music of the Ainur.
plausible, which would also have to mean legal.
Sorry. Now, are we putting Dave Silver Spoons in here, or is that not?
Oh, absolutely.
But that's not really a flashback.
Oh, that's right.
You're right. That's time. Not. That's just really, that's just something yeah. else. No, yeah.
That's true. That's,
flash
that's
across.
A, yes, flash across.
Yep.
I can't think of anything plausible. Other than maybe the, you know, origin of the Arkenstone or something, where you know they have pulled it out of the mountain and Tor's doing something with it, but that doesn't seem to be on track with where we'd be going in the movie.
By the way, I'm starting to be concerned that the way we formulated our riddle, that everyone's going to just vote for A.
Oh, for I don't think so.
Yours falls into E.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Yours falls into E. Well, we might as well tell people what the you know how we've
here. If you would like me to put them up on screen, or you want to read them first?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and put them up on screen?
Okay, put them on screen.
Okay, but I'll read them for people who are listening. So, our options are a historic flashback in any location. So again, it has to be a historical flashback. We're going back in time. B, Erebor in the present. C, Lake Town in the present. D, Dol Guldur in the present. E, none of the above. So the frame narrative would be E. The law offices of Chubbs, Chubbs, and Burroughs would be E.
Legolas pursuing Bolg would be E.
Legolas pursuing Bolg. Depending on where... I mean, if they've ranged far afield, then I would give it E instead of C. But yes,
right.
Yes.
If he's next outside the census territory, right. Or if he's even he might even be approaching Dol Guldur.
Right, certainly. So I do think that they're taking the goblins to Erebor scene would be E. You know, that would be because it's not part of the Dol Guldur sequence exactly.
Oh, right, that's true. Yeah.
So yeah. Okay. So there are the options.
We have some votes already.
So what do you guys think? Dave thinks E, right? Are you going to actually vote for E, Dave?
Oh, I don't know. No, I think A.
You think A?
I really do. I really do want them to do the auction thing, but it seems very unlikely.
Yeah.
For people who've really read the books or people like us who have sat and talked through this, it seems like if they did it, we would all be like, oh yeah, that's great. For the vast majority of people, it'd be like, what the heck is this?
That's true.
Yeah, it just seems too much of a risk.
Liesl has a good question. If we start the film with, Radagast showing up in Lorien, rallying Galadriel.
That's an E.
Is that E or D?
I think that's E.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it's E, too. If it's actually in Lorien, of course, if it's Dol Guldur and Galadriel showing up, it's D, obviously.
It's D. Right.
But yes, if we have, Galadriel and Celeborn standing there looking statuesque, and then Radagast shows up on his bunny sled.
Use any actor for Celeborn, we wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah.
The ring.
Exactly. That reminds me, I'd meant to give credit to the person who was suggesting before when we were talking about the Battle of Five Armies. Yeah, that Faye did suggest that maybe this is Celeborn's chance to actually do something. You know, maybe we'll have Celeborn show up. And I doubt it. No,
Boyans will stay true to Tolkien and give Celeborn a very, probably no role at all in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. So
are you staying with A, Dave?
Yeah.
I, you know, for me, this is more about statistics with Jackson, and I that maybe bordering onto critfic, but it's kind. It's not really. It has to do with like the pacing of the movie and how he puts his movies together. What's how's the story gonna? Yeah. You know, what's the right way to do the story?
It's a genuine observable trend in the films itself. So it's not critfic. Yeah.
And so he's done. You know, two out of three have been flashbacks. Is he going to go for? You know, is he going to go for the full? Full
Did he
boat?
Do a flashback in every single one of the or prologue in every one of the Lord of the
Actually,
Rings films?
No.
Yes.
I think he did, first, didn't he?
Well, he did a prologue, yeah. The first one was exposition.
Yeah,
and
the
actually,
first one was exposition.
What was it? What did we say? Didn't we consider An Unexpected Journey a flashback? Because even though Bilbo was narrating it, it was a past. The action sequences on film
yes.
were actually past, right? Yeah. So it's either A. Well, I'm between A, D, and E. Because if it's not, if it's going to happen in the present, I think it's either going to happen at Dagobah or somewhere not Erebor or Lake Town. So I'm really, I think I'm going to go with A just because I'm going to bet that he's going to go with the formula he's used before.
I'm going with D.
You're going with D?
I'm going with D. I think he's going to break the pattern.
I'd like to see that, frankly.
Yeah.
I won't begrudge you this.
But I think that it's, to me, the thing that is most telling is the dual cliffhanger. You know, we have two right. plot threads that have ended in suspense. And if he does a flashback, one of the two of them has to be no sooner than three scenes in. And we've already left Gandalf behind for a long time. We can't
yeah.
leave Smaug
yeah.
behind for that long, or it's going to seem strange and frustrating
right.
to the viewers. We've already left right. Gandalf hanging on the cliffside for what seems like forever. If we have another sequence, again,
you can't. Have, it's would be too much to have two sequences like a flashback and Gandalf.
Yeah,
we
if we do, if we
yeah.
do, if we do a historical flashback, then the death of the dragon, which would seem
you're
most logical.
You're changing people's minds, Corey. You're then, changing people's minds before
then,
my eyes.
Then, if we do that, the Lake Town sequence, the destruction of Lake Town sequence, is going to be for a while. I mean, if we do. I really love the idea of the flashback. My favorite flashback idea is Thran and the Map and Key. My second favorite one is Thorin at the Dwarf Council. If we do either one of those sequences, then we transition.
Not gonna make sense.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess the Map and Key would.
Right. Well.
Yeah. This
then
is
we transition
my problem.
To Smaug. You know,
this is my dilemma because I feel certain that they will do some kind of prologue or flashback because they've done it in every single other movie and they've done it when I felt like it wouldn't be make sense. Like I did not think
right.
that they could do one for the second film. I thought that prologues and flashbacks were basically were banned due to the frame story and they just completely disregarded that to start the second film. So but at the same time I cannot for the life of me come up with a flashback that I think would work and is likely other than maybe Smaug's attack. So I'm basically going on blind faith that they'll just do what they've always done.
Right.
If I were to pick what I think would work narratively, I would go with either D or E.
Right. And you know, I agree, you know, Philip makes a good point. It says that it's more than a trend. It's an artistic choice to keep the movies consistent. I agree. It's not that I would say, oh, if he does a flashback again, he's just in a rut and, you know, being uncreative. I certainly don't think that an artist like has to vary things in that like variation is the fundamental principle of, you know, interesting art. No, I mean, there is something to be said for that kind of, for that kind of pattern. I think it's interesting. And I do think it worked very well, as I was trying to argue, in the Lord of the Rings films. So that's great. But I just don't see... I think one of the two cliffhangers has to be handled right away. And I agree with you, Dave, that it's unlikely that the opening scene of the film is going to be Smaug flying towards Lake Town. That would have too much of a... of a like mini series last time on The Hobbit, you know, opening bit, you know, it's going to feel like a TV mini series. So I don't think they're going to do that. I think, but I could see very easily, especially since it's already been a long time. We come with maybe not the sort of the final climax of the Dol Guldur fight. You know, maybe not Galadriel and Radagast coming in and, you know, laying the boom down on Sauron in the opening sequence, but some movement, either just returning to Gandalf. I hope there are no moths involved, but, you know, having an opening shot of Gandalf caged, you know, at Dol Guldur, would be good. Even if all it does is remind us of how he's doing and sets up Radagast and Galadriel returning to him, that would be enough for me, to kind of take that cliffhanger off, you know, the sort of
right.
Dial down the suspense on that one.
We know that Sukkur is coming, right?
Right, exactly. And then I'd be able to hang on for a little while long. Now let's go back and let's kill Smaug and let's do like a half-hour Lake Town destruction sequence and Smaug destruction sequence. And then we can return to Dol Guldur and, you know, have Galadriel,
well, you know,
you know, put on the boots.
Jackson has really missed out. People are coming up with some great flashback ideas. They should have talked to us.
Yeah. Ooh, I like Philip's idea, the jailing of the Nazgul.
Yeah. Or the flashback from Thorin's perspective, remembering Erebor as it was, then go to the present with Thorin and the mountain finally so close to fulfilling his new purpose. I mean, there's some good ideas. Bilbo as he is in Rivendell and Lord of the Rings, where he's writing scraps and fragments. Oh my gosh.
Indices. Appendices.
Yes, appendices. Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
In appendix.
The jailing of the Nazgul, that is an interesting idea because that would help to make, maybe it would help to make that sequence in some way relevant.
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, Jackson has said that Morgul blade that good old Radagast found is going to play a part somehow, and plus it has to get back in the Witch King's hands because that's the Morgul blade that wounds Frodo and Fellowship.
Yeah.
Ring,
oh, I've got this is an E, not an A suggestion. Okay. So we start the film with the Nazgul doing a raid on Rivendell and stealing the knife back. Huh?
Oh my.
Yeah. Because it has nothing to do with anything else in the film, but it's different and needs to happen for the sake of very long-term continuity with a different film entirely, and that makes it compelling for the opening of this film.
There you go.
Huh?
There you go. And that could be concurrent with what's going on in Dol Guldur and Erebor.
Right. Yes.
So, and it explains why Elrond can't come to Gandalf's aid. It's because Rivendell's been...
There's been a security breach, yeah.
Faye has a question, which is, will a prologue count as a flashback as A? I'm not sure what... I think if whatever events... I don't know what qualifies as a prologue and what doesn't, but if the events being described in it take place in the past, then I guess it's a flashback.
I think that the main distinction to me would be between just straight flashback and exposition. You know, like the Fellowship of the Rings. You know, the Galadriel voiceover... explaining the history of the forging of the rings, you know, with partial accuracy. That's the kind of thing that I would count as a prologue. Whereas we just start, you know, when the first scene comes up, it's, you know, on the streets of Bree and Thorin meeting with,
on the official publication of this episode, I could change that answer to a prologue or flashback in any location.
Nah.
No?
Prologue is E.
Prologue.
I realize that historic flashback is kind of a redundancy, but okay.
Well, you know.
I like Serena's suggestion. They should go for the 24-style split screens.
Yeah.
Where they're portraying, you know, we have three or four little windows on screen showing us different events taking place in parallel. Yeah.
So that way we could still get the gripping events back in the Shire and somebody like hammering down an auction sign on Bilbo's yard while we're getting Gandalf being rescued from Dol Guldur and the dragon dying in Erebor as like three scenes of comparable significance and drama, and we don't have to lose any of them.
Yes. I tell you have almost inspired me to switch to E. Just sort of You've just about convinced me that there's enough. There are sufficient degrees of freedom on this that they could do something that could plausibly count as E.
Yeah,
that would work.
Faye says, for a concurrent scene, as someone sells Bilbo's spoons, the dragon is melting Lake Town cutlery.
Exactly. See, oh, it's the parallelism could be really tight there. I really think so. You know, and then at the same time, you have I don't know, you know, Gandalf in prison trying to bail himself, you know, trying to chip his way out with a spoon.
With a fork.
So we have a whole spoon thing going on at the beginning.
And we have a glimpse of Dine having dinner.
Right, with a spoon. So, there we go. Yeah, no, so Dave, I assume it was my Roach shows up today and suggestion that really, finally has kind of sunk in and led you to think that really it could be E.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, just your sort of, your impassioned argument that...
going through all the possibilities. Yeah,
that the flashback plus something else, that it would... Basically, your argument that there are enough different circumstances this time around that Peter Jackson could deviate from his previous pattern, that he really needs to resolve one or the other cliffhangers as soon as possible. Basically, you did a good job of pointing out that, I think the Peter Jackson will stick to his previous patterns argument is very strong, which is the main reason I was going with A. But you have done a good job of arguing that no, there's signs that maybe he might deviate this time. He probably still won't,
I want to point out to the other 33% that have not voted yet. This is not a binding vote.
Yeah, yes. This is totally, so, totally.
I'm going with E. For three reasons. One, because that then we have diversity in our host answers, and at the end of the day,
there will be only one.
Yeah, we're not really playing this game to win, right? We're just playing to have fun.
Man, I play this game ruthlessly to win.
Yeah, you know, except that Dave's the one who every year has hosted on Facebook how he's been the winner.
Well, only among the three of us compared to the listeners, though. Yeah. We're playing to win. We're terrible.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really consider the full consequences of that statement. But,
So one encourages diversity in our answers. Two, I see enough possibilities of things, especially since prologue will count as part E now.
Yep.
What I will do is if there's any hint of like a Bilbo voiceover during a flashback, I will just argue vociferously that that is a prologue, not flashback.
Okay.
And three, because this allows me to sentimentally go with the auction thing that I really wanted, which I think is completely unlikely. But if something else happens that counts as E, then I sort of killed two birds with one stone. So I'm going with E.
Yeah, yeah.
And me, though,
can I just say, killing two birds with one stone is kind of an insensitive comment to make in this context.
This
you know,
when, yeah, you're right.
When we're mourning the degradation of the thrush and the possible absence of Roach, I just want to say you're opening wounds here. But anyway, sorry, Trish, go ahead.
So non PC. my biggest besetting sin, or that's not really it. My biggest trip up over the last two games has been overthinking. I'm sticking with A.
Okay.
Wise decision.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, probably so.
Even though I want some of the other ones, I'd prefer the other ones to be true. I'm still sticking with A. Well, I think we're actually probably pretty good, because I was noticing there's some duplicate of names in the list, you know, in the attendee list. So we're probably pretty close to folks being done voting.
Yeah.
Anybody,
well, why don't you close it so that people can see.
Yeah, we can show
the results.
And actually... The winning answer came down because it was originally, at one point it was close to 60%.
Yeah.
So, Silver Tongue Olsen there.
Oh, and Dave, you know, Dave.
No, that didn't change.
When Dave jumped ship.
That number didn't change after Dave jumped ship. Sadly.
Hey, one person in the comments, Faye, said that she was like, oh, prologue counts as E? Oops.
Oh, okay. Well.
So it's probably like 13.2%.
Yeah,
there we go.
I mean, there we she go. Could have changed it before I closed it.
I just to answer Question that Brian just asked really quickly. Brian says, speaking of toys, might the kites in the first movie have been a little bit of a reference to Dale's thriving toy industry, for which it was most notable in the book? I do think so, Brian, actually. I think it's not a coincidence that we saw both a doll and kites in Dale. Yeah, that's exactly the kind of
detail. And then later
detail.
We have Balin sort of saying to Thorin, all we really are toy makers.
Right. Right, exactly. Yeah, that was the reference to toy making there too.
Yeah.
So, yep. Yeah, no, I do suspect that of being deliberate. Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. That was an unusually silly episode, but that was fun.
we were due.
And let me make the announcement, which Dave kind of spilled before, which is our next Mythgard Academy class is going officially. To
and
be.
Ed already spilled it on Facebook.
Yes,
so.
I know he did. Ender's Game, finally! Ender's Game finally wins an election after coming within like a single vote from winning both of the previous two. We are finally going to do Ender's Game. So that should be a lot of fun. That class is scheduled to start at the end of March. So we're looking at right at the beginning of it. This coming week is the final week of Unfinished Tales. We've got two classes this coming week, one on Tuesday evening and one on Wednesday afternoon at 9:30 and 4 o'clock Eastern Time, respectively. And that is the end of the Unfinished Tales class. Then we're taking 2 weeks off, and we will come back.
They will live
in
on.
April.
They will live on.
They will live on. Yes, they will still be there.
Corey, related note, when is this summer semester for Mythgard starting?
The summer semester for Mythgard begins on May 5th. So we actually should be opening enrollment for summer classes within a couple weeks, is the goal there, before the end of March.
Cool. Okay.
So the next Mythgard Academy class and the opening of the summer courses should be contemporaneous. So, yeah, the summer class should be a lot of fun. I've been working on that.
It's going to be another tough choice.
Recently, so yeah, it's going to be fun. Of course, mine is the least surprising because I'm continuing my Chaucer class and doing the Canterbury Tales class in the summertime, and that should be big fun. I always love teaching.
Oh, it'll be fun. Talk about. I mean, it does get a little silly. Well, Chaucer just is that way. I mean, he just begs for that, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, Chaucer is like more pure fun than any author I know. I mean, I don't know anybody who's like. From reading the books, I can't think of a single person who seems to be having more fun writing than Chaucer was. You know, I mean, it's just, just fantastic. Anyway, so those are our first two big announcements. The other, which is sort of a teaser announcement. We have made significant progress in the planning of Mythmoot 3. Our next Mythmoot conference, we will have details that we will be announcing to you soon, so stay tuned. We hope sometime in this next 2 weeks, between now and our next episode, we hope to be announcing an official sort of open house to find out more details about our Mythmoot conference. We're going to be opening registration for Mythmoot very early this year. So it's actually almost time for us to offer an early bird special on next year's Mythmoot conference.
And I will say to those folks who have come to one or two of them, this is going to be even another different incarnation of Mythmoot. So
yeah, you
still need to be there.
Yeah. It's going to be very cool. So, So that you can look forward to another announcement about that next week, and we will see. So, yeah, so we're going to be doing, Ender's Game starting in about 3 weeks from now, and then we'll be talking about Mythmoot next time, and Mythgard summer classes just around the corner, too. So we should have more information on all of these things next time.
Hey, Trish, can you remind us, people are asking in the chat room, what will be the process for officially submitting votes or predictions?
At the end of the official game, which will be probably toward the end of August, we will have a form, you know, or actually it'll probably be much like how Ed set up the voting for Mythgard Academy, so people will be able to go to the site and yes. enter their answers, officially enter their answers for all of the riddles.
Yes.
Cool.
And submit.
Yeah, that mechanism that that Ed has set up works pretty well.
Yeah. And they'll know well in advance. I mean, we'll be able to let them know when that's coming. And there'll be plenty of time from the end of the last riddle episode to the deadline for submission that people can listen to the audios. And if they want to listen to the whole series, you know, whatever they want to do. So and voting will probably be ended by, like, maybe figure mid-September or so. And we'll spend the rest of the year then analyzing all of Jackson's hints and yes. tips that he's been putting out on video.
Yes. I love the analysis phase of the year.
What do you mean you love the analysis phase of the year? We haven't done it that way before.
Oh, I know. No, but I mean, I love doing what we do during yeah. what we are yeah, now calling true. The analysis phase of the year.
It's true. I do.
I mean, I really like the speculation, and I know I love talking about these things. Thinking through the issues in advance and everything. But of course, what I most love doing is, you know, doing close readings of a text right. that I actually have in front yeah. of me. So,
By the way, let me let the group know, and I don't think we need to keep this secret in terms of how the correct answers are going to be selected this year.
Yes.
We're going to have what we're calling the consolation series of Riddles in the Dark. It'll take place after the first of the year, so it'll be like, you know, early 2015. And I don't know how many episodes it'll be because it depends on how many riddles we go through in each episode. But we'll be using this voting mechanism that we're using now, you know, to just get the polls from you guys on these episodes. We'll actually be using this voting mechanism for the listeners who dial in on the NetMoot for that episode. We'll be deciding what the right answer is for each riddle.
That's right. Yeah, we're going to do, like, crowdsourcing answers to the riddles.
Right. Crowd judging.
And we'll be going through and discussing them each so that, right. you know, we have the opportunity to do analysis and discussion attached to them.
So that's Excellent. When Dave can make his pitch for the E, you know.
Right. And, of yeah. course, this is also sort of transparently a reflection of our desire that Riddles in the Dark not actually end, you know.
Yeah,
so
we're, right.
so we, you know, we're just the idea of having the film come out, doing one or two episodes to talk about the third movie, and then being like, okay, I guess
now
that's
what do
it.
We do? Yeah, and I've been assuming the listeners wouldn't have a problem with that, so
yeah. So no, we're gonna
strike this out.
And yeah. if we drag it out long enough, the extended edition will come out, and then we'll have to have another series of episodes.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
I agree. And then for season 5, we will begin our speculation for the eventual future Silmarillion movie or Lord of the Rings reboot.
Right. The eventual Silmarillion film due to be released in 2097. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, I think we'll do The Hunt for Gollum. It'll be next.
So we'll have about 70 seasons of speculation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which actually for the Silmarillion sounds about right, really,
yeah,
I have to say.
That's right. We'll spend the rest of our lives doing this.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Good. All right. Well, we have actually kind of stayed to time today, so I'm kind of impressed by that.
We did.
So thanks everybody for your comments and discussion, and I enjoyed even our somewhat silly discussion today, but that was good. So thanks everybody for listening, and Godspeed.